And good morning again, everyone. I'm Tim Broyles. And if we haven't met yet, I look forward to meeting you. I'm new on the team this summer. I joined in May on the pastoral team over adult discipleship with a focus in building and strengthening our home groups and small group ministry. And I had the privilege of sharing with you on Memorial Day weekend and sharing some of the memorials of my faith, kind of a get-to-know-you kind of a message. And as we continue in this series that we're calling Are You a Good Human?, I'm going with that theme, and Are You a Good Human Neighbor? And it's a shame we have to have a topic like that. We all learned this in kindergarten, hopefully, how to be a good neighbor. But this world, it just seems, is so volatile with a short fuse many times. And many people have forgotten how to be good neighbors out there. Just about anywhere you go, you can find good neighbors and bad neighbors. But this is about being a good human neighbor on the bus, if you will. And as I reflected on scriptures that really lend themselves to this topic, I was reminded of the experiences of a young man who was trying to find his way in the world of humankind by his first day of school and getting on the school bus. And as Pastor Denise pointed out, school started last week and this week for most of our area schools. So I thought we'd start out with this clip of a part of the movie Forrest Gump. How many have seen Forrest Gump? Just about everybody. There's a fun little two-minute clip about Forrest's first day on the school bus.
I remember the bus ride on the first day of school very well.
Are you coming along?
Mama said not to be taking rides from strangers.
This is the bus to school.
I'm Forrest Gump.
I'm Dorothy Harris.
Well, now we ain't strangers anymore.
You know, it's funny what a young man recollects, because I don't remember being born.
I don't recall what I got for my first Christmas, and I don't know when I went on my first outdoor picnic, but I do remember the first time I heard the sweetest voice in the wide world.
You can sit here if you want.
I had never seen anything so beautiful in my life. She was like an angel.
We're gonna sit down, aren't you?
What's wrong with your legs?
I'm nothing at all, thank you. My legs are just fine and dandy.
I just sat next to her on that bus and had a conversation all the way to school.
My back's crooked like a question mark. These are gonna make me a
next to Mama,
narrow.
No one ever talked to me or asked me questions.
Are you stupid or something?
Mama says stupid is as stupid does.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Forrest Gump.
From that day on, we was always together. Jenny and me was like peas and carrots.
Wow. She taught me how to. Poor Forrest. What a tough experience for him walking onto that bus for the first time. I ask you, when was the last time you were the new kid on the bus? Maybe we can quickly remember our first time on the bus, or maybe the last time you were the new person on the job, or the new person in a schoolroom, or the new person that just moved in the neighborhood, or new in a new church. There was Forrest, standing alone at first on that bus, all eyes looking at him. Some were judging him, some were ignoring him, and some were outright rude to him. What did he hear? He heard literally, "This seat's taken. You can't sit here." In a very real way, what Forrest heard was, "You don't belong. You're not one of us. You are not important." And these are often the voices of the world, and they can hurt deeply. The world is a tough place. And the great enemy would whisper to us that we are not accepted, that we aren't sharp enough, that we aren't rich enough or good looking enough. and I would say that these are lies. Now, it's true we're not good enough. None of us are good enough. That's why grace is so awesome. God desires and accepts all who would surrender themselves to Him and receive Him. And He has a heart for everyone, including the vulnerable and the widows and the orphans and the refugee and the traveler and the marginalized, basically all of us. Our job as neighbors is to love all in the name of Christ. Now, I do have some teaching notes for you in the bulletin there if you'd like to grab those out and follow along today. The first biblical directive that we're going to look at is in Hebrews 13. And we're writing to the church here. It's written to the church, and it's telling us to keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. So the solution to this problem of the world not accepting one another is to love one another. Show hospitality. Neighbors and guests are coming to your world and to your church, literally and figuratively, and they do belong. The world of neighbors is largely like the kids on that bus. As humans, we can get selfish. We think about ourselves first. We don't want to share. Maybe we have a fear of being vulnerable. Maybe we don't have the energy we feel to meet someone new. Or maybe we simply aren't prepared. The problem of you don't belong here is a voice of the world. Those kids on the bus are selfish, they're angry, they're edging others out. And this is not to be the case for us in the Church Universal. We are to be a light of the world, aren't we? The church exists to glorify Jesus Christ and to bring the hope of His message to a world that is literally dying for it. It has been said that the church is the only organization that exists for those outside of it. Now, we first know that was written and recorded by William Tyndale, who lived over 500 years ago and is best known for his translating of the scriptures from Greek and Hebrew into English, laying the groundwork to what later became the King James Version of the Bible. I've read that quote is also attributed to William Temple, who was an Archbishop of Canterbury. And I also found on Google that it was attributed to C.S. Lewis and Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I don't know who said it first. I don't think it matters. The sentiment is the same. Whether it was 2,000 years ago with the disciples, or 500 years ago, or today, the church exists for those who are not yet here yet. Jesus' message is for all people of all times. This church that we have here called Dexter United Methodist Church exists for all people of all nations and backgrounds to be welcomed and to hear the truth of the world's sinful condition and of God's love and redemption plan for all persons. Pull out your bulletin there for a second, if you would. Look at the cover of the bulletin. You've got today's date, Sunday, September 3rd, 2017. We are to love God, love people, and serve the world for Jesus Christ. Nothing's changed. We could even underline, love people. It's not about us. Those words are not about us, are they? They're about serving others. It's all about meeting the guests on the bus and in the neighborhoods of life. And the guests are coming here to this place. And so I would ask us today, are you ready for the guests? I did some research this week on our attendance history. It's no surprise that Sunday of Labor Day weekend is traditionally one of the lightest weekends of the year here at church, as people grab one more weekend away. And in 2016, there were only four other Sundays that had a lower attendance than this Sunday of the year. And that tells me that this morning I'm speaking mostly to our regular faithful core members, regular folks. And you are needed because next week is coming. Next week, yeah, you understand. Conversely, next week, September 10th, the start of school, many of our members will be back. Many of our regular attenders will be here. Many, even on the edges of involvement, if you will be here as they reprioritize schedules in the fall and getting in some good habits. And according to those same attendance records, this first week back is one of the largest of the year. In 2016, there were only five weekends in larger attendance, and that includes the biggies of Christmas and Easter and Mother's Day. One of the biggest weekends of the year is next weekend, and September for that matter. Over these next several weeks, there will be many folks checking us out, coming to our church for the first time, new on our bus. Some of these folks may only know of us what they read on the signage out on the street, or perhaps they surfed us on our website. These folks may not look like us. They may not share your interests. They may be from different cultures and ethnicities and belief systems. They may have sordid pasts or issues that they're dealing with. They may have different political views than you. They may wear the colors of an opposing sports team. Why, they might even have a Hoosier accent, like me. And to that regard, I would say that Sharon and I have certainly felt welcome here in these 3 months that we've been part of this family. I want to just commend for a moment those of you who've been on the hospitality team of ushers and greeters and welcome center, coffee makers and shuttle. If you've served on those five teams at any time this summer since Memorial Day, would you just raise your hand for a second? Raise them high. Look at that. That's about, I don't know, a fifth of the room. Let's give them some applause. That's wonderful. Thank you, and I want to thank all of you because all of us are on the hospitality team, right? All of us are commissioned to be greeters and welcomers wherever we stand. I want to thank all of you because we have felt that warmth from you as a church over these last few months. We truly feel it is a family. As pastors, we like knowing why people come to church the first time. We track those things. But frankly, I'm even more interested in why people come back the second time, because that says even more. What makes a person come back to a church and return it that second time? Pastor Steve reports that when he surveys the newcomers, the new members' class, after every time it's offered, the common thread that he hears is, I came back because I was welcomed here. It's a welcoming church. I felt accepted. So friends, you're doing a good job. Just a word of caution for us. We can't get lazy in these areas of hospitality. It is easy to fall into lazy habits, both in our homes and in our church home. It's easy to fall into a pattern of a messy room or casual and apathetic hospitality in which we take things for granted. As an example, this is a very fresh and real story of a local church back in Indiana who was not ready for their guests just last Sunday. This particular pastor I've known of and respected for 27 years. And he's an excellent teacher and been involved in stellar ministry over the years. And he's now the new senior pastor of an established church. And a friend of mine visited this weekend to see how he was doing. Here's what my friend wrote to me during the week in an email. He said, it was a fine church, nice service, great preacher. No one was at the door. No one greeted in the parking lot. No one working in the sanctuary. No one outside of a designated welcoming time welcomed me at all. I will not be going back. Wow. What my friend experienced in short was like Forrest on the bus. What he heard was, this seat is taken. We don't have energy for you. You don't belong. So in summary to my first point here, guests are coming. Let's be ready. When we think of the endearing qualities of Forrest Gump, in the character and in the movie, is his innocence. I really appreciate his innocence. That's why the movie is so endearing. Forrest doesn't know a stranger. And when he was confronted by the bus driver, I hope you could hear that. It was hard to hear at first. When he stepped up to the bus, he said, I'm not supposed to take rides with strangers. She said, it's the school bus. I'm Forrest Gump. And she introduced himself. Well, now we ain't strangers anymore. He gathered his wits about him and stepped into relationship, didn't he? He introduced himself to a stranger. Good for him. His mother may not have liked it, but he did. So maybe for you, that first step is also the hardest. Maybe it's in welcoming a guest. Maybe it's in overcoming a prejudice. Gaining energy to invest in someone new. So you could call this section of my talk the most practical part. This is where I'm going to hit a listing of some no-nonsense tips for us in welcoming strangers in our midst. Hospitality is one of my passions in the church, and I ask you to please find a nugget or two in my suggestions and run with it as it applies to you. Let's look at our biblical example. That's in Hebrews 13. We read that passage earlier. It said that sometimes we might entertain angels when we have hospitality and not even know it. And there are three examples of this in the Old Testament. One of those stories was in Genesis 18. Pardon me a sec. Genesis 18. The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day. Pardon me. Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. He said, "If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under the tree. Let me get you something to eat so you can be refreshed and go on your way now that you have come to your servant." "Very well," they answered, "do as you say." Abraham didn't know at first these were angels. And as the story unfolds, we learn that the presence of these guests is as of the Lord himself. It's in this interchange that Abraham and Sarah are told that it's finally time for them to have a son, the beginning of that important lineage. And as the conversation continues, we read about that critical exchange between Abraham and God about the pending destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. That all starts with this interchange of welcoming guests. He just did what was the custom. He did what was right. Did you catch some of the practical things that Abraham did? First of all, he bowed low to the ground, which was a symbol of great humility and respect and even service. He is saying to them that they are important in his home. His home is their home, and he wants them to be comfortable. He offers them clean water to clean their feet, in effect being concerned about their personal needs and showing them, if you will, to the washroom. He offers them a place to sit down comfortably and to relax and rest. He offers them something to eat. Now, who of us, when we have our wits about us, doesn't do all these things when we have guests in our home? Can I get you something to drink? Maybe a snack? Sit here, it's a good seat. The washroom's down the hall, there's fresh towels on the rack. Friends, I submit that being hospitable isn't complex or difficult. It's just a matter of doing it. It's not about perfection. At its very core, it is simply genuinely extending your heart to that guest. One example is making room. The shuttle begins next week here at church. We offer this every fall as we have more people here in that busy month of September. So park at the edges of the lot, if you will. And if the lot's full, go ahead and take the shuttle. Just go to the Dexter Mill and pick up the shuttle. It runs all morning. And make room for a guest in the parking lot so they don't have to walk so far across this big parking lot that they don't know. When they get in the sanctuary, make room. We have plenty of seats today. It's a low attendance day, but that's going to change. So if you're used to sitting on the aisle, get ready to scoot in. Here, sit down next to me. I'll scoot over for you. It's easy to do, isn't it? If we can get out of our seat. That's the hard part. That's my seat. If you see someone sitting by themselves, ask them to sit with you. And if they say no, thank you, then respect their privacy. But I would say that it's better to invite than ignore, wouldn't you? Take a step. Introduce yourself. Like Forrest did, now we ain't strangers anymore. Please wear your name tag. I see a lot of name tags on today. I love that we have name tags. Please, please use them every week. Make stopping by that table on your way in here the first place you visit when you get on campus. Put them on. If you don't have one, all you need to do is sign in each week on that friendship pad. And once you've done that three times, the database is triggered to print your name tag. So please use them. We go to the expense and trouble of printing them every week so you have them. So please use them. Now, if someone doesn't have a name tag on, and you think you should be able to remember your name, how many of you have done this? Someone doesn't have a name tag on, you think you need to, you know their name, but now you're embarrassed. You don't know their name. Or you stress to remember. Maybe you even avoid that person so you don't have to be in that awkward spot. How many have done that? May I suggest get over your fear? We're all in that boat one way or another. Just fess up. Laugh at yourself and say something like, "I'm sorry, I should know your name by now, but I'm distracted again. Tell me your name again." And as the new guy, I've had to do that many times, just this morning, didn't I? Sorry, Walters. I'm trying to learn 500 plus names, And I have the excuse of being new. And that'll last for a little while, but soon I'm going to be here long enough, and like most of you, feel like I should know more names by now. Even so, honestly, if someone looks you in the eye, shakes your hand, and asks you to please remind them of your name, how will you feel? Will you be offended that I didn't know your name? Will you feel disrespected? Will you think less of me because I didn't know your name? I'd suggest that you probably will feel accepted, that you know that I truly do want to know your name, and I'm not going to fake it or ignore you, but that I care enough about you to ask and to get it right. Sometimes it takes 5 times, they say, to repeat a name to get it. Sometimes it takes us 10 or 15. So if someone isn't wearing their name tag, get over your apprehension and ask them one of the most important things about them, and that's their name. Now, along that line, here's a secret for you. If someone doesn't have a name tag on, maybe we can assume they're newer here. So all the more reason to talk to them as a guest. And a good opening line for them would be, I'm not sure we've met yet. My name is Forrest. Or remind me, we've already met, right? Get them talking about themselves. How long have you been at the church? Who attends with them? Are you in a home group or a Sunday class? If not, show them around because we have lots of new classes starting. Now, I'll give you a word of caution. Sometimes when we're meeting someone at church, we'll ask the question, which we think is a good question. We'll say, are you new here? Which is a yes or no question. I'm going to suggest that's not the right question. A better question would be, how long have you been a part of this church family? It's an open question, and if they're new, they can feel comfortable by replying, oh, it's my first time here. And then they're going to perk up and want to listen to you as you get to know them. Then you can have a conversation about their interests, their needs, and help them get connected here at church. If you ask that question and the person has been here for years and years, they have the opportunity to say, oh, we came with our grandparents back in the 60s, and we've been part of this church ever since. And they could tell you about their involvements and their faith story of their family and how God inspired them. Friends, another tip, I want to encourage you when you're in the lobby or the atrium, I encourage you to resist the temptation to talk just with friends at the exclusion of meeting someone new. Perhaps the quick meeting with a friend can be to set up a coffee later or to set up lunch or something like that. I encourage you to see the stranger among us as a mission field. These folks that are coming in that don't know us yet perhaps need the love of Christ in a very real way. Now, these are some good practical tips that apply here on the campus. They really apply anywhere, don't they? Can I state the obvious for a minute? Can we take our neighboring attitude out of the campus? Can we be respectful drivers on the road and not get angry at the other drivers? Can we be good tippers and have conversations with our servers? Show them respect. Can we spread a little love in the world that so quickly jumps to the worst conclusion with a short fuse? Can we be polite in social media without polarizing our views and condemning our fellow man so quickly? There are times to take a stand, but why do we need to argue for arguing's sake? Perhaps when it comes to our position on things, we can be folks that are what we're for, known for what we're for, not what we're against. Does that make sense? I encourage you to get along with your neighbors, your immediate neighbors of your home, as best you can. Introduce yourself to them. Do you know their names? Sometimes I'll write out a list of the 6 houses closest to me, wherever I'm living, and ask myself, do I know these people? Do I know their names? Do I know their kids? How can I pray for them? Maybe you want to take the month of September and figure out the names of those 6 families and pray for them every time you drive by their home. And you will be amazed at how you will have love and compassion for them in a short time. So this third point here, as Forrest reflected on that bus story and remembered that angel, it was Jenny's acceptance of him that rose above all those rejections. Jenny made room for him on the seat and in her life, and they became as what he called peas and carrots, like peas and carrots. She simply said, you can sit here if you like. And you could tell that he felt accepted, and then he made a friend. What acceptance? Do you remember the last time someone accepted you like that, as a stranger? Like Sharon and I have felt here among you? You just never know how that little act of hospitality will bless someone. You don't know that person's story. You don't know their struggles. You don't know their pains. You don't know how Christ is working in their life or how Christ will flow through you to bless the experience. It convicted me when I heard Forrest say, "Besides Mama, no one ever talked to me or asked me anything." Wow. That's hard to believe, but there are plenty of people who feel that way. No one cares about me. No one engages me in conversation. No one wants to hear my story. Do you know what that feels like? I encourage you to be an expert at listening. Find out what people are saying. Ask questions. Now, Jenny's questions in the video clip were pretty direct. What's wrong with your leg? And are you stupid? I don't necessarily recommend Jenny's lack of tact, but I do appreciate her desire to learn. His legs were different, and it became a point of conversation. She wanted to know why. It was a way they could connect and have a conversation. I remember one of my son's best friends in elementary school was a first grade classmate whose legs were misshapen and in a harness because of cerebral palsy. My son asked his teacher, "What's wrong with Michael?" And the teacher encouraged my son to ask Michael himself. And upon doing so, he learned of Michael's struggles and of his dreams and of his great attitude. And they became close through the rest of elementary school. People do remember this kind of caring, these seemingly insignificant acts of caring. So we'll close with this pivotal passage in Matthew 25, words of Jesus. And as you consider this context, this section, Jesus is teaching of the great and final judgment. And in this Matthew account, it's the last of his teachings before that Passover night in which he was betrayed and in which we'll take communion in a few minutes. In this teaching, he refers to believers as sheep and unbelievers as goats, and he judges the sheep. It reads, "When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on the glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me.' Then the righteous will answer him, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?' The king will reply, 'Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me.'" Wow. Let that rest on your heart for a minute. You don't know that person on the bus. You don't know their story. You don't know where they are with Christ. And the Lord says that whatever you do to them, you in effect do to me. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. Your small acts are important, both to the guest and to the neighbor and to the Lord. Your act of hospitality may be entertaining angels unaware. Come, let's get ready for our guests.